with your hosts, Dwayne Perkins and TK Kelly.
Hey, boys and girls, welcome to the Movie Night Podcast. I'm Dwayne Perkins. Each week I'm joined by my lovely co-host, TK Kelly. And we have a special guest. As you know, we watch a movie and we discuss said movie. It's a blast. It's a fun.
It's a fun.
Dwayne's racist
old-timey Italian guy accent. Our special guest this week is a very funny dude. You have seen him on Last Comic Standing. He's also a writer on a new CBS show called The Inspectors that comes out this fall. Nicholas Anthony, what's going on, man?
Gentlemen, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here, man. How's it going?
I am impressed with your digs. I really like this whole setup is great.
It's amazing here. Everybody who comes in here has nice things to say about the studio, and me and Dwayne can't take any credit at all. We just show up and do our thing. But
show up.
Smart enough. Quality by association.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, like sometimes I've done podcasts where they come to my house, and I was like, dude, I don't have any equipment. I don't know what was your plan exactly.
Well, it can be pretty minimalist.
They make it work.
We're set up. We're a little spoiled here, I think.
No, this is. Yeah. I mean, this is the. Yeah, this is great, man.
Well,
this is
the real deal.
And you know, TK and I being New Yorkers, this studio is very much like New York. And we're New Yorkers, you know, because like you go to New York and you talk to a New Yorker and they're like, oh, I've never been to the Statue of Liberty. And I've never been, so many New Yorkers have never. And we don't use half of the things that they have for us to use in this studio.
Oh, no, like, not at all.
The sound effects. There's so many things that.
I mean, we could effectively do this on our couch, but like, something feels good about how real this
great,
is.
Yes.
There's a 50-inch screen behind us.
Oh, I could do without that giant picture of my face.
I'm sorry. Did I get the inches wrong? 60, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's 60 inches.
Corrected. I was handed a piece of paper that said it's 60.
That is no puny 50 inch.
But ladies, Nicholas Anthony does not, it isn't over.
No.
Underestimate.
Undersell, over deliver.
So what's going on, man? What have you been up to lately?
I am growing out this dumb beard. Tomorrow I fly out, so I'm writing for this show. And It's basically my first professional, like, hey, here's a TV show that's actually going to be on the air. And on the episode that I wrote, I just threw out a Hail Mary. I was like, hey, what do you guys think about me playing this homeless guy? And to my surprise, right from the get-go, they were like, for sure.
Weird.
Is that my phone? That's weird. I was on silent and I'm in airplane mode. I guess I wasn't silent. Sorry about that.
What's bizarre? What did that even signify?
Yeah, what is that? What does that tell
you?
Is it time to have sleepy time tea?
Yeah, it sounded like Dwayne's phone just sprouted tiny little wings and started flying away.
I'm so sorry. I never even used this thing as an alarm.
These guys are real professional.
All that credit that Nick gave us up top for how professional we are just went out the fucking window.
We'll show it to the audience. You see this new phone, right?
Ooh. We'll show it to the audience who's listening to our podcast.
Or online, we'll put an insert.
We'll put an accompanying picture.
It used to have a string, and it's new. I just got it yesterday, and I'm still. And sometimes I push buttons. I don't mean to push.
Yeah.
And it looks like a clutch, and I've been catching some flack about that.
Overall, I feel like you've made a bad decision.
That exact conversation. The lines you just said is like what an old white woman said in like 1998.
Like, I don't know what's going on with this thing. Dwayne's very confused by his phone.
My apologies.
We're like the most technologically advanced. You're still claiming Luddite a little bit.
But that's where we stand. We do what they tell us to do here. We don't know shit. So like you were saying,
how crazy is it going to get?
You were cast as the homeless guy.
Yes.
So you cast yourself and they were on board?
Yeah, it was I'd like to think there's a little bit of a chess player in me. When I wrote it with the intention of like, all right, if I was going to try to make a cameo in this, how could I write a character that I know wasn't going to get cut?
Yeah.
And so they brought in this guy who was like a red herring and it turned out to not be the criminal, blah, blah, blah. And then I called him back in a way where there was like this crazy aha moment where there's like, no way you could cut it. It's a great, just a good piece of, you know, the writing really worked. And then when they said yes, it was like, oh, okay, cool. This is great. But then it went up the chain a bunch and CBS they went to my website and saw my like professional headshots and they're like, no, he can't do this.
He's not homeless enough.
I literally went to my garbage can by my house and I just messed up my hair real quick and took a selfie of me by my garbage can. I have it. I can show it to you. and then texted that to the producer, and like an hour later, like, yeah, yeah, you totally got the part.
Wow. Like, our apologies. Yeah, exactly. You are way more homeless looking than we thought.
You can go full homeless in 10 seconds? Yeah, you're in.
That's the lesson for young aspiring actors in LA. Just have that homeless headshot just in case.
I think what it is the lesson is don't be afraid to ask and be creative in your approach. We're creative people, but yet when it comes to the business side or the trying to get yourself in the room side, we're like, you know, people get a little snobby about having to be creative in that respect. But
right, well, also I think it's very important, I think, that we say at this point, because people, I don't know who's listening, but some people, like, people read The Alchemist and they don't get it. I don't know what that was. I'm hoping that wasn't me.
We just got random shit going on all episode.
But
every time I make money in my stock market,
right. An angel just got its wings. I think is what happened. But I want people to really be clear on something, that because you're leaving something out, but not on purpose, you know. And that is that you had a good relationship with these people, and they trusted you enough, and you felt comfortable enough to ask. And if they said no, you weren't going to pitch a fit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is I didn't... It's not like, you know, the crazy person could be like, I'm going to show up as the homeless guy.
In character.
And then they're going to be like, oh, this is brilliant.
He was born to play.
Which is hilarious because they... After they said yes to this, they told me a story about a guy who wasn't paraplegic, but who committed to... He came in for like a casting because they were the guys who did Martin and done a bunch of shows. And they were so freaked out by, you know, you hear these stories of like, oh, this guy, you know, came from Seattle and slept on the improv steps. It's like,
yeah,
they're not going to give you a set if you do that. Like that crazy, like, you know, getting in, that stuff is, it's just relationships. Find people, show up, you know, like the one guy was, I met through, I went to school at UCLA for a little while and like met somebody through that. It was just like, naturally kind of fell in, you know, right, just right. Like it worked itself out. And my friend Jason always says this, you know, eventually you start doing something and then eventually you're just doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
Then whatever that's going to be, it's going to be. And for me, it's very difficult because I'm a very ambitious, let's do this, let's get it done. But I recently I've been going back to that. There's a Krishna quote where he says, you have the right to your labor, but not to the fruits of your labor.
Oh, that's deep. I never heard that one.
But just meaning that show up every day, be the professional, kick it out, and then what happens is going to happen.
Right.
And part of my personality is like, I can't. I want to will it to be successful. I wanted to will it. And more times than not, I've had to like Michael Jordan it, where I just like let the game come to me. You know, you put that effort out, and then you got to just kind of like... You got to have faith that it's going to be good. Yeah. You know,
I'm glad you didn't say Kobe Bryant, because I don't know if that would have.
But you force it
five times though.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about the show? You said it comes out in the fall.
It's not something that it wasn't my idea. I'm about to tell you the potentially one of the craziest. So the Venn diagram of this show is they tried to get housewives between 25 and 46 because housewives. Or if they watch it, then their kids will watch it. They wanted to get the young adult market. So there's a kid who's like 18. They also wanted to get the handicap market. So he's in a wheelchair. So
they kid in every market,
kid, college. No, this is, it's just starting to get crazy. The post office is paying for it all. There's a thing called postal inspectors, which was started by Benjamin Franklin like 250 years ago. And they were the original FBI, like a huge, very important organization that's been around since. And they were the first people to move all the gold from D.C. to Fort Knox. And like moving the mail back in the day was like really, it's like, you know, what email, like cybersecurity.
Well, yeah, there was no other means of communication.
So it was incredibly important. And so this division of the U.S. postal inspectors was like really serious. And like they started by, you know, Benjamin Franklin, the whole deal. So now the perception of postal carriers is like Newman and Cliff Clavin, and they really are trying to like bring the badassness back to postal workers. And so these guys that we met, they all like, you know, they're like FBI agents basically, but they do only postal related crimes. And the premise of the show is just a kid had two parents that were postal inspectors. The kid and the dad were in a car accident. Dad dies, kid loses his legs. Now the kid is in college and he's interning at the postal, and he's like a computer whiz, so he like helps his mom solve crimes while at the same time trying to be a college kid. da-da-da-da-da, television.
Very nice. Very nice.
Like, and it got picked up for 22 episodes, and it's like, it's my first, you know, like, here's real money for writing, right. You know, like, television.
Well, there's a good sort of history of people in wheelchairs on TV shows. Like, it's going way back. I used to watch with my grandmother, Ironside.
Yeah. And didn't they try to remake that recently, didn't they?
They did.
Oh, it did not fare well.
Yeah, it had like a 8 episode.
That's great. I like that. So you're saying that before the story was at all developed, the Venn diagrams were in place?
I think so. In Charleston, there's a production studio where they shot Army Wives. And Army Wives was one of the most successful shows for Lifetime in the history of Lifetime or something. I don't know the exact. But because of it, now they basically hollowed out a mini mall and they turned it into a film studio.
Right.
And this guy, he was the guy who, I'm like talking with my hands because this is so tall. He was the guy who did all of Jack Hanna's stuff. So he made a gazillion dollars doing animal related reality shows. Well, they made so much money with CBS that they're like, all right, we're just going to give you slots and you develop whatever you want. And he's just like I don't know the dude's name specifically, but he's like just a great salesman. And he just knows how to kind of connect dots. And he knew that, I mean, essentially the government is funding the show because it's the Postal Service. And so he knew that they were trying to change this. And young adult is huge. And it's like a cauldron of just, in theory, mediocrity. But it's,
It sounds like if people like the characters, then you're golden.
Yeah.
If it goes well, and I hope it does, then you can expect other networks to have the FedEx guys.
Their version of it.
Yeah, it's definitely it's been a lesson in television, because even I just got the script that they I wrote. They basically gave me an outline and they said, here, you get 2 weeks to do it. And I was just so excited, I ended up writing it in like 3 days and kicked it back to them. And then they got called in and did another rewrite where I was in the room and stuff like that. But then it went through a lot of changes and I just read it all. And it's one of those things where you're like, yeah, that's the script I wrote.
sort of.
Yeah, there's a couple. If I were to do a screening with my friends, there'd be like one or two plays where I'd be like, I didn't write that line. That's not my line.
Yeah, that's that collaborative part of TV where you do have to sometimes something gets in there and it's like, no. Just to clarify, not that there's anything wrong with this joke or whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't me.
Yeah. Right. Well, it's going to be funny though, is if I'm like waiting to be like, nah, and then it gets a big laugh and I just sit down.
Totally.
Like,
that was all me. Really, my episode.
Really pithy dialogue here.
Well, let me ask you this: this is a transition here. Based on how you got in, and even writing that role for yourself, the homeless role, would you look at a movie like Nightcrawler? Do you think, oh, that could happen, or do you think that could never happen?
The actual story of the character?
Yeah, like just a guy who's sort of driving along the street and then becomes like
just hustling. Like
6 months later, he can walk into a news station and.
Oh, I think that's completely possible.
Yeah, okay. I think it's eerily true. Let's just intro the movie real quick. It is Nightcrawler from 2014, directed by Dan Gilroy, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Rene Russo, Bill Paxton, and Riz Ahmed. This movie is like horrifyingly believable.
I think that this film, they get it wrong so often, especially with first-time directors. I know it's Dan Gilroy who wrote and directed it. But he had written a lot of stuff, but this was his first time directing, and it's such a good piece of cinema.
Like, I think it's great.
I was rewatching it this morning, and I don't know if it's because it's cast so well, but it's shot so simply. And they really just allow the reaction shots of Jake Gyllenhaal to kind of tell the whole movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I do think Jake Gyllenhaal is fabulous. I think most of the performances are really great. I think it's written really well. I think I would like it more if I'm supposed to take it as an allegory, a parable of sorts, then I like it more. But if I'm taking it as like, say, this is just a story that happened.
Yeah.
It's all pretty feasible. But then there's some convenient stuff that happens, which, you got to... Got to give him that, but the fact that the bad guy wins, You know, I just wonder what the lesson is that if there was one.
I'm not sure that the intention is to come away with a lesson, except for like, I just appreciate the reality of it. Like this, I don't know that I've seen a film where the villain, so to speak, is this engaging and weirdly likable since like Hannibal Lecter. Like it's this odd like. I don't hate this guy for some reason. And he does get, you know, he gets away with shit. He doesn't pay for what he's done in the end, but he's so compelling that it's like, I don't even, it doesn't bother me.
To me, that's why it is allegorical.
Yeah. And from a writing point of view, I think the writer,
I'm purely speculating here, but I think the whole, it's a cautionary tale of like, hey, this is an interesting like subset of our culture. But this is done in a way where if it got to its extreme, this is how things are going to get out of hand.
Right, yeah. Right.
And obviously right now it's creating a dialogue, which is good. But what's going on with that? How are we changing and what does that mean? And, you know, hustle, you know, there's this hustle culture of like, you can get whatever you want. And that is a good, it's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
On both sides of it.
And this shows you in the sense of like how far ahead you can get if you have that drive, but if you also have, you're not held down by morals.
Yeah.
And especially, I mean, the fact that it's set in LA, I think, you know,
that helps.
It's very real. I mean, not necessarily in that world, you know, in the world of television news, but it just generally, this is a place where people can tend to get ahead if they step on people to get there.
Right. Well, and also because like he's good at sort of understanding his fear and playing on other people's fears. And LA is a place where so many people don't know what's happening, who are in positions where they shouldn't know what's happening. Like,
yeah.
Like it's kind of different, but the fact that CBS didn't think Nicholas could play a homeless guy, like, You run a network. You understand how makeup works. Hair, you know what I'm saying. Yeah. And so, yeah, this could totally happen. If I'm looking at it as an allegory, then I'm like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
But if I'm looking at it as to say like and it's a movie, so I have to give it still some slack. But it does since I watch a lot of Forensic Files, they just beat into you over and over again that no one person is smarter than everyone else combined.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what happens in this movie, which is fine, but so if I let that go, then I can really enjoy it. But otherwise it's like if he was smarter than everyone else, then when we meet him, he's not stealing fences. You know, like we meet him, he's already further ahead if he was truly smarter than everyone
else. I feel you. I feel like it was that intelligence that he had over everyone and the ease with which he could bullshit through anything that's what reminded me of the Hannibal Lecter character. Was like, there's no touching this dude. The cops didn't even scare him in the least.
But it wasn't, and this is my one criticism of it, and it's not really a criticism because they did a good job, but is the casting what really made this film?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I don't know who could step into the role. Yeah, yeah, he was really great.
I mean, even when he's, I don't know the dude's name, but his like assistant.
Riz Ahmed,
yeah.
Like
in the movie, yeah.
In the original scene when they meet in that coffee shop, like just the subtleness of like it feels voyeuristic.
Yeah.
Like it feels like when I first saw Kids, I was like, there's cameras? Where are the cameras? These kids are so real.
Right, right.
And it was the closest thing I ever felt to like true voyeurism. And in this film too, I feel like there's moments, and I hope that's intentional just because it's a voyeuristic film where we're, you know, taking advantage of.
When he's like, sell yourself. And he's like, well, I took 3 buses to get here.
Oh, that kid, he did such a good job of embodying someone whose life has just kind of gone to shit.
Yes. But how do you find that actor? Like, where is the...
He's an English guy.
Yeah.
They're all English guys.
They're all English.
Damn it.
Exactly right.
Technically, we're...
But like, he's like, I took 3 buses to get here. And that's the thing, as an allegory, it's really... This is my second time watching this movie. This time, it hit me even more because I realized how many borderline sociopaths that I know and deal with.
Yes.
And it was like a Debbie Downer in a sense, but it was still, I needed to see it because I needed to be like, if you keep fucking with this sociopath who's showing you some tendencies, worst case scenario, you could die. Probably not that, but still, it's so just going to
be. It was so that kid just needed that $30 a night. Like, he just needed a fucking job.
But
he had the bad luck of falling into this particular job. But it was like, it was just desperation. I think because even right when he first met him, you could see in his reactions that he knew that the guy who was hiring him, Jake Gyllenhaal, was he was a little off.
He was
his
a little
shit.
Off. He's a little. But also, it's like he ends up being the voice of reason, and I don't know if he. If he dies because he does ask for more money, but he's the voice of reason. There's a scene in the car when he's just like, yeah, life is all about being happy with what you got. You know?
He's and a good person. He's the only good person.
No, he's our connection in because even when they're driving fast, we're scared because he's scared.
Yeah, right.
You know,
yeah.
Like he's our into this. And that if you were to say that to me, hey, this, I mean, what do you think? He's like some sort of like 30 years or 28 year old?
Something like that.
Like if you're like, that's the kid that's going to be the conduit into this film, you're like, that seems unlikely, but he totally kind of sucked me in. And what we're talking about, because of the homeless thing, I got sucked into reading about personality disorders. And just to do some backstory on like, all right, what kind of homeless guy did I want to be, bipolar or da, 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 da. And the thing that, and going back to sociopaths, I think we're very quick to go, people are this and this. Mm-hmm. And with the research that I've done recently, no one is one thing.
Right.
And there may be, you know, you might have a little scotch of it, but it's not like, the pure sociopath, I think, is almost less scary. The guy who's like a family man and then has that ability to go there when things get real crazy, like that to me is even crazier.
Oh,
like,
completely.
Hitchcock talked about like the scariest villain is the villain who is speaking in reasonable terms.
Yeah.
And then he's still murdering kids or something. You know, like what that to me.
Wait, and, you know, it's crazy. I just said that to someone earlier about a different thing. And I said, someone who lies to you 80% of the time is way more dangerous than someone who always lies.
Yeah.
If someone who always lies, you're like, okay, there's always
full. That's the thing. Yeah.
Someone who lies half the time, you're like, oh, what's
That's, you
know,
scary,
and
it's scary too because, you know, I definitely, like, you always hear like, oh, you gotta get the toxicity out of your life, you gotta, and then something will happen and you're like, man, do I need to keep that person completely out of my life because I see that 20%,
right,
you know? And that's a hard, especially in a town like LA where, you know, isolation can happen, and I'm definitely somebody I like a lot of people around. I find myself having to kind of like make cuts on things where I'm like, I don't want to have to, but I feel like in the long run, it's just going to be the best decision.
Yeah. And what's great about this movie, what I like about it is the viewer, like we're watching it and we're being voyeurs. So we know he's messed up.
Yeah.
But each person he deals with, they only see that small window and they might get a sense that he's a little bit crazy
when they meet
no
him.
No one has a, no one is getting the full picture, and that's how he's able to do
it. When they first meet him, he comes across as, like, maybe quirky and intense, but not like, like, I mean, that security guard gets close enough to him right in the beginning, the first scene, to just get choked out, and he has no idea. Like, he's approaching what looks like this frail, sort of timid guy,
right?
And then he chokes him out and steals his watch. It's such a good, like, Jake Gyllenhaal is so good at, I think he was a perfect casting for this role because he was fucking bubble boy. Like, he can be super innocent and like harmless looking and then turn on a dime in this film. It was fucking great.
Well, and then he gained what, 60 pounds or something for Southpaw?
Oh, is
yeah, right? He's a monster.
I'm super impressed with him.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see it coming when I saw Bubble Boy, but that's an underrated movie too.
Right.
Solid performance. Let's get into the games for this week. Each week we do a handful of questions related to the movie in particular. Let's start it off with, all right, so basically what Jake Gyllenhaal's job is in this movie is to exploit people's misery. He is to find people who have been in an accident, some kind of crime has been committed, and he tapes it, sells it to the news networks. Pretty fucking sleazy. So what's the sleaziest job that you think you'd be okay with doing?
Well, for me, I must preface this by saying I once went into a what do you call those, pawn shop.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm going to get a guitar, right? I'm a horrible guitar player, but I've been known to bust out some gin blossoms or whatever. So anyway,
he is black, you guys. Right. And you can't see it, but he still is black.
So I walk into this pawn shop and I could feel the spirits of the people who had pawned their things, and I had to leave. I'm like, I just
those are weird.
I can cut
weird
the evil
places,
with
man.
A knife, you know. So I don't know what I have the stomach for, but I will say this. I also have an implant in my mouth from a basketball accident, and like it wasn't covered. Like my insurance was like, oh, that's cosmetic. And I'm like, it's my front tooth.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like something else.
Yeah, it is cosmetic. Right. But have you ever fucking looked at a man with one front tooth and be like, he's fine?
Right. Like, you don't. A front tooth. When you don't have a front tooth, you've checked out. You've told society.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's it's cosmetic in the sense of it's your looks, but it is damaging to your life.
It's wearing sweatpants, basically.
Yeah. Well, but it's also practical. You got to chew, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not chewing with fake tits, like
that's a. So with that said, what my scam would be is some sort of medical billing scam where. Where we
this is so specific.
He's really thought about
it. I feel
it.
Like this is going to get used against you in a court of law.
Right, I know, right?
I'm going to have to come back in. Were you there when he said?
Well, we pull people in and we do one thing, but we say we did another, so the insurance will cover it.
Yeah.
So
insurance. Yeah, I mean that's a pretty sleazy racket.
Like I go in to get an implant, and we just say, well, let's call it 3 fillings. Boom.
Like, yeah.
What do you think, Nick?
So when I was a kid, I was when I was 16, I won the world championships in close-up magic. And
I'm sorry, what now?
Oh yeah.
We're just going to gloss over that? Are you serious right now?
I'm very serious.
That's how we met, you know.
Well,
I mean, you were doing comedy and magic.
He made Dwayne's front tooth disappear.
Yeah, when I was featuring, this is a long time ago, but, so I've always thought like, you know, just being a con man generally would be very easy for him. Like, I've met so many people and...
You could be a grifter in, like, the realest sense. Totally. If you can do magic, you can grift.
It's definitely, like, I've thought about, like, my affinity for, like, you know, being on the rails and, you know, like... I don't know. There's something about being on a train that sounds fun and
oh, nice.
Yeah,
like a hobo type situation?
I mean, but no, more like Cary Grant style. Like,
oh, I see.
And, you know, like, there's just something... You know, old movies made trains very sexy and... I mean, but I'm all for, you know, like in the movie Lost, there was the guy, remember the long blonde? He was the con guy,
mm-hmm.
But his whole thing was he was doing long cons where like, even at the end, everyone feels like, even when you screwed everyone, you're so good at it that everyone feels like no one got fucked
over.
Yeah,
like thanks for even letting me witness that.
Yeah, like that's the level of, you know, I would want to go that deep with it and like do some really crazy long cons where you're like, you got what you wanted.
Sounds like you want to run a cult.
It's
that's the longest con of all.
Yeah, yeah.
It truly is.
I mean, essentially, show business is that. I mean, you're basically trying to find win-win situations where...
You know. I think what I'm currently doing is the sleaziest thing I could do.
Like, have you seen this beard?
Like being a comedian is just like, it's so fucking I was thinking of like a show I did recently. It was a fun show. It was a mix of burlesque and comedy and I was closing it out. So I had not gone up yet and halfway through the show, they got up and they did their burlesque thing. The girls were great. But then a couple of them off stage asked me if I would go up there and participate in a booby tassel competition and like have the tassels on. And I was like, no, what the fuck? Like, I'm sorry. Like, and some of the comics said yes, and that's fine. I guess it's their disposition or they just felt bad saying no. I was like, absolutely fucking not.
Right.
I can't go up there and literally dance for you.
Yeah.
I haven't even done my act yet. These people don't know who I am.
Like, completely. Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
That's a bad idea.
Ugh, comedy. Very sleazy, guys. Make a drinking game out of this movie. So every time something happens in particular, maybe something that's very repetitive, you take a drink. For me, Nick, you kind of already touched on this. Every time you felt like his assistant Rick was in mortal danger. Like you, because you really did, you identify with him and you always are worried that this is the scene where something horrible happens to nice kid.
When he looks at him and says, what if I understand people? What if it's,
oh, that's
fucking like
terrifying.
People?
That's when he reconciles with like, this is who I really am and I'm going to show it to you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to scare, like he scared him so bad in that moment that this kid Rick knew that leaving the car was risking his life. But he was like, if I stay in this car, this guy might murder me right now.
Yeah.
I don't know why he didn't just run away then, but that's that's just me. But yeah, Rick. Oh, poor Rick.
Poor Rick.
What do you think, Nick? What's
my
yours?
Drinking game is drink every time Jake Gyllenhaal's eyes are open to their fullest for more than 5 seconds.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a great one.
That's that intense psychopath look.
Yep. Like,
you know you can play a psycho in Hollywood if you already have kind of big, like large, round
eyes. They just
eyes.
Don't dry. They're just still wet 10 seconds in. Just like, It makes me itchy.
Yeah, I was going to say every time he sort of like quotes some kind of corporate speak or some kind of self-help thing.
Oh, man,
yeah.
He could just churn that out, huh?
The Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
That was one of the best parts of the whole movie is after he discovers all these bodies in the house and he's running down the driveway as the cops are coming and still, while he's running down the driveway, he's spouting out that like corporate bullshit to Rick. It's really, it's like a very funny moment.
You should have showed initiative and
as they're running away.
But my drinking game, I think it would be every time he updates his equipment. Because, you know, he starts with, like, a really cheesy camera, and by the end, he's doing the FTP uploads.
Totally.
Yeah.
Let's finish it with, this is an interesting one, let's recast this with comedians. So, you gotta pick a psycho, you gotta pick a kind of sexual older lady. Why don't you start it out, Dwayne?
Well, I didn't pick an older lady, so let me cover myself by saying
that. Yeah, you gotta clarify that. older can mean like literally a year older. Right, than, right. It doesn't matter.
So Jake Gyllenhaal's character, Will Ferrell, the assistant, Rick, Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords.
Okay.
changes the whole movie now.
That would be so funny. It would immediately make the movie hilarious.
And Rene Russo's character, the newswoman, is Maria Bamford.
Okay.
The naysayer, the guy from Mad Men, who's Kevin Ryan.
Oh, yep.
Who, the guy who keeps saying, like, we can't show this. That guy, Frank. I'm going to make it a black woman, make her Sherry Shepherd. Like,
okay.
Just, and she's just like, I know y'all not going to show it. You know what I mean?
She's the moral compass, but she's more aggressive than he is.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Sherry. That's the homegirl. And then, Bill Paxton's character. Who was I going to put? I forgot to write something down. But I'll say Bill Paxton can be the guy from Eastbound and Down.
Danny McBride.
Danny McBride, yes.
Yeah, he'd be good at that. Kind of that gum, sort of like, gum-chewing, fast-talking.
Yeah, like, I got a van.
That's funny.
You guys are screwed over now. I'm gonna be a van.
I like that.
Well, then it becomes Anchorman really quick. Yeah,
yeah.
It kind of does. Anchorman on wheels.
It's a good movie. For me, so Jake Gyllenhaal's character, Lou Bloom, I want to see the Sklar brothers tag team that, like Mary-Kate and Ashley.
But
like,
just
switch out. They only play them one at a time.
That's great. That's great.
But kind of like like Robin Williams in One Hour Photo. I'd like to see the Sklar brothers play like serious crazy. I think they could do it. Rick, the assistant, I think should be Nick Swardson.
Solid.
I love the idea of him being the guy in the passenger seat. Like, what the fuck? What are we doing? Just terrified constantly. Rene Russo, Aisha Tyler, and...
Very nice.
Except there's no way anyone could ever intimidate Aisha Tyler, so I don't know if that works. Like, Rene Russo was, like, a strong woman in this, but she was also very easily, like, kind of crushed under
Jake Gyllenhaal's
thumb. All you had to do
was say, sweeps.
Well, yeah, he pointed out, he's like, your job is going away. Now let's have sex. That was very uncomfortable. And Bill Paxton, I want to see Dave Attell in that role. I think he would be so fucking funny.
That's solid. I like that.
What do you think, Nick? Why don't you finish this out?
I mean, I didn't... I'm just spitballing here, but Jake Gyllenhaal, I would love to see... If the one thing that potentially makes him... Like, maybe it feels actory, if we could actually find somebody who's a little bit more creepy, like a Jack Nicholson, like a younger Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Somewhere where you're like... Because on some, level, as much as I let him have it, there is still part of me that it seems like there's a star playing that role.
Yeah. How about Judah Friedland in it?
Something, you know, like how he played.
Sans hat. Hat.
He was in that one movie where he played like the really like, it was like that, comic book movie.
Yes, the comic book about the guy who drew it.
And he played, you didn't even recognize him, and it was so committed. And I would want some sort of performance where you're like, oh my God, did you realize that was, Jack Nicholson or like, who's the guy who played The Fly?
Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah, like a younger, before they're...
Cameras.
So you want to go back in time.
Yeah, just like younger versions of for that. As far as for Rick, who would I... Maybe the kid in Breaking Bad, the guy not
Aaron Paul.
Yeah, Aaron Paul.
Oh, nice.
You know, like have just a little bit more street credibility. Maybe that could be fun. And I really don't. I can't imagine anybody but Bill Paxton playing that role. Maybe Jeff Bridges. I could do a Jeff Bridges or a. I'm trying to think of somebody else that would. play that. Maybe Bobcat.
There you go.
Oh, nice.
Bobcat Goldthwait, maybe.
Bobcat could be good in the lead too, man.
He could, yeah, potentially.
He's great.
He's one of those guys that, like, it's you know, you wouldn't want him going to acting school. Like, yeah. However he is naturally, that like that type of person you'd want him.
We should do some of his movies. They're fucking insane. Really good too. That about does it. That's all the time we have, dude. Nick, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, guys. Absolutely. Really appreciate it.
Anything you want to promote? You want to tell people how to find you? Twitter, all that good stuff.
I've got an album on, or I got a Pandora station now, so just Nicholas Anthony on Pandora, check that out, and my website nicholasanthony.com for all the social media stuff.
Look for him, guys.
Me, I'm at dwayneperkins.com. Friday, July 3rd, I'm at the San Diego Fair performing. I'll be playing some games as well, but I'll be performing. And then all July I'm in the Midwest, where I met Nicholas. Ohio, at Wiley's, then Zanies in Chicago, then Comedy Off-Broadway in Lexington, and then I'm finishing out the month at Laughing Derby in Louisville.
Check them out, guys. I am at TK Kelly Comedy on Twitter, and all of July I will be on tour with the guys from Threesis. We did a tour last year. Now we're doing the East Coast, starting in Florida, finishing up in New York, so come check that out if you are anywhere in between. Nick, thanks for being here again, man.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Really fun.
Thanks for listening, guys. Tune in next week.
You've been listening to Movie Night with Dwayne Perkins and TK Kelly. Be sure to like them on Facebook. Just search for Movie Night Podcast Show. And follow them on Twitter. Just search for @MovieNightCast.